Hi, everyone. Welcome back to the Change Your Mind podcast, where we explore personal development, spirituality, and science. I'm your host, Chris Ashley. I'm really excited for today's episode. We have a dream interpreter with us, but she does more than interpret dreams. She's created her own system, and I'm just really, really excited for the conversation we're going to have. First, though, a couple quick announcements. Head over to the links down in the show notes. You are going to find a lot. You will find links for my lovely guest. You will find a link to my book, Change Your Mind to Change Your Reality. You will find ways to sponsor the podcast, my free masterclass, some free downloads you can get, ways to work with me, my courses, all the stuff, and ways to stay connected on social media. Please come stay connected. And then, as always, the show is part of the Los Angeles Tribune Podcast Network. We are doing a lot in the personal development sphere. I was just on stage with Joseph McClendon and Mark Victor Hansen and Les Brown and Dr. Joe Vitale. So, like, we have so many cool events coming up, both virtual and in person. Please stay connected.
Hi, I'm Chris. When I was younger, I went through trauma that caused me to feel broken and lost. But my life changed after I had a spiritual awakening. Since then, I've dedicated my life to studying and learning from masters all around the world that have helped me to create a life of fulfillment and abundance beyond my wildest dreams. Now I'm dedicated to sharing everything I've learned so that you don't have to suffer for decades like I did. I've seen people's lives completely transform, and I share it all right here.
All right, so with me today, I have Megan Mary. Megan is a metaphysical author and dream worker who specializes in the analysis of women's dreams to promote transformative personal growth and enlightenment. She's the founder of Women's Dream Analysis and the Women's Dream Enlightenment podcast. She is an intuitive, introvert, and mystic. After being diagnosed with 3 chronic illnesses, she experienced a spiritual awakening. She now works with women all over the world, offering dream interpretation, transformative journeys, and enlightened guidance. Her debut fiction novel, The Dream Hunters, A Metaphysical Mystery of Magic, Book 1 of Witches of Maple Hollow series, will be released in October 2024. That sounds really cool. Welcome, Megan. I'm so happy you're here.
Thank you for having me, Chris. It's wonderful to be here.
Yeah, I'm really excited. I've had one other dream interpreter on the show before, but he does such different work than you, and I'm just really excited that you use it to help people's transformative personal growth and enlightenment. So if you've listened to the podcast, you know how I start them. I start every single episode the same. That is by asking my guests what their origin story is. And I know we kind of hinted at it in your bio, but I would love for you to share with listeners your journey of how you became a mystic and a dream worker.
Yes. So I was always drawn to everything esoteric and metaphysical. When I was a child, I really had what I felt was a connection to the spirit world then, and had many amazing dreams, both recurring nightmares as well as beautiful flying dreams. And I really always wondered where we were going when we were dreaming and why we were going there, why we spent so much time there, and more importantly, why nobody was talking about it. And that continued to fascinate me, as well as all other mystical things, through my childhood. But once I became an adult, I would say that I started paying less attention and really wasn't listening. And it wasn't until I really had a crisis and a series of medical events happen where I had to do something to heal. And I knew that just doing the medical aspect wasn't going to be enough, that I had to do the mind and the spirit part as well. And I started meditating a lot more. I started opening the door to my dreams and asking for guidance. And when I did that, I started to receive a lot of downloads, a lot of synchronicities, a lot of messages, a lot of instruction, really. And that instruction was to do the dream work and to do it as soon and as fast as possible. So I wasn't really prepared to do any of that, and it required a lot of adjusting and healing and spiritual work to move into that space.
Thank you for sharing your story. So how did you, I mean, you get this instruction from a spiritual download, go do dream work. Like, where do you even start? Was that something that you had been in tune with, or did you have to learn it?
It's, I like something, your
kitty back there, by the way.
Oh, yes. That's Merlin. He's actually in my book.
Merlin, nice.
Yes. It was something that I always felt very drawn to, and felt that there was something else to it, but I didn't really realize how much of a spiritual doorway it was until I opened that pathway and asked for that guidance. And when I did that, all of the metaphorical stories of my dreams started guiding me and showing me what I was supposed to be doing.
That's really cool. So did you just kind of intuitively figure out the meaning behind them, or was there like some sort of guide that you used?
I did a lot of research and I looked at a lot of different methods. And of course, I've studied psychology at the graduate level and in philosophy and astronomy and all those different things. You know, my degrees are in English literature. So I dabbled in a lot of different study areas. And I liked the Jungian approach. I understood that that was taking the symbolic approach, but what was missing from that was the spiritual aspect and the interdimensionality approach that I really felt to be true. And it's hard to take that inner knowing that you might be bringing with you from previous past lives, from previous parallel versions of you, something that you feel you really do know. But how do you quantify that out in society and say, well, I don't know how I know this, I just know. Of course, those are the clair senses, those are all the levels of knowing that are possible. And so it was taking that, taking all the other approaches and saying, well, what makes sense to me? And that's how I brought this method to life, really. It became what I did myself became what I then taught.
Very cool. So I was just thinking back on like my own dreams. So dreams have been really interesting in my life. I'll often have a dream about someone and then that I haven't seen in a long time. And then they'll call me the next day, or something big life event will happen to them. I'll like see it online. So those have always happened to me, but then in the past like year and a half, 2 years, I lost my dog who was like my child, and I lost my dad. And now I'd say like 98% of my dreams are visitations from them. And they're like visitations where I know they're dead. And I can like say to my dad, like, oh, I miss you so much, or I love you. And he will respond and give me a hug. And it's like, it's real. But I also will, you know, sometimes have those kind of crazy dreams that we all have. And like, to me, those always have felt like tapping into a parallel life that might be happening. Because, you know, like all past lives are parallel lives, right? Time doesn't exist. So, and you mentioned it as you were talking, like you were always interested in like where we go when we dream. So to you, like, what are dreams? Or are they multiple things? Like, yeah, are we astral traveling? Like, what is it?
There are multiple things. And I've had that experience as well, because my father passed away when I was in my 20s and I had those very strong visitation dreams and still do on occasion. And you can really tell the difference between those and the other kind. So there definitely is a difference. But I think that to me, the dream world is really a interdimensional space. It's not just us defragging our events of the day. It's where our spirit goes when we're allowed to take a respite from this world. So because we are spirits having a human experience, not the other way around, we have to sleep, because when we sleep, it allows us to go back to that spirit world. And so the dream space is that spiritual space. And all things can take place there, and we can interact with other spirits, and we can go other places, and we can experience other things. And so it really becomes a place beyond time and space. And it's an opportunity for us to integrate that aspect of ourselves and bring it back into this 3D reality and make it part of our consciousness here to raise our spiritual intelligence.
Thank you for that. So, do you think that everything that happens in dreams is something that we can put into play in our life to help us grow or to help us manifest or to help us go on our path?
I do. Okay. I think it's the way that we can access the universal wisdom that has all the knowledge about our existence, all the multiple levels of it, the here and the there, before and the future, the callings, the purposes, everything that's below that surface of our 5% conscious existence, because our 5% conscious existence is comprised of cultural entrapments and our ego and our judgments. And it's doesn't allow for the 95% subconscious and the spiritual existence. So when we are in the dream world, we're able to access that. And the more we can start to decode that dream language of what the dream is expressing to us, the more that we can start to integrate those parts into a more whole existence.
Yeah. And then I know that you also like take that and you help people like not only analyze it, but apply it to their own personal growth strategy. So what does that usually look like when you're taking that information? Or maybe I know you're going to do a dream interpretation on me. Maybe we do it live where it's like, maybe that's what we do. Maybe we jump into that next, because then we can kind of show people in real time how you help integrate that information. So do you want to jump into that? And then sure. We can, I want to ask you about like lucid dream techniques and all that later too.
Yes. Yes.
And I know that you've created your own method for interpreting dreams, so I'm excited to see it in action.
Yes. So you had originally submitted one that was longer. This one is very brief. So we're going to go over it, and then I'm going to ask you some questions about it so we can get some more detail.
Yeah. And then just for listeners, a little background, like I told you most of my dreams have been visitation dreams or kind of like clairvoyant dreams, but I've had two nightmares in the past like 2 weeks. So I sent Megan over the first one, but I pretty much knew the meaning behind that based on, it was like very obvious to me based on events. And then I had another nightmare like 2 nights ago and it felt like a good one to analyze. So she's gotten a lot of emails from me.
That's fine. So I'm just going to read your summary.
Yeah.
Very brief summary. What I remember is I jerked awake and my 7-month-old son was upside down in water, submerged to about his chest. I got the feeling that I must have been giving him a bath or something and had fallen asleep or gotten distracted, though I believe he was in a container in the sink. I panicked and pulled him out and screamed for Shane to call 911, which he did. I did CPR on him and revived him, and he was fine. So if you were to give your dream a title as if it were a short story, what would you call it?
Water and a Mother's Panic. And by the way, becoming a mother, I was just talking to a friend right before this, like, it doesn't matter how spiritual you are, like the anxiety comes with being a mother.
I bet it does. I'm not one myself, but like you said, you know, cat mom, obviously, I can understand. Okay, so let's go to the beginning. So what I like to do with my method, there's really four parts. So they're memory, mood, mirror, and metaphor. So memory is really where you write down your dream and you write down as much as you can remember about it. And you try to write down the details as well, because a lot of information is in those minor details that you might leave out. And then it also includes how you're going to give it a title, which you have. Then we look at mood. That's step two. So how did you feel when you went to sleep? How did you feel in the dream? What emotions did you experience there? And then when you woke up, what emotions did it leave you with? Because sometimes they're not all the same. So can you remember the mood that you went to bed in?
Yeah, totally. So my baby sleeps with a outlet sock on, which if you're not familiar, it's just like an ACE bandage kind of thing, but it measures his pulse ox. My dog has chewed that thing 3 times and it's been going off in the middle of the night, which when it goes off, that's like a panic moment, right? Because usually it means his heart rate or his oxygen has dropped below a safe level. And so that's been going on the last week and a half. And I think we finally got a new one. When I had this dream, I think we had the new one for like, maybe it was the first night with it. It was, because it came with a new one and it also came with a little story. And I was like, oh, I'll read the new story for story time. And I read the little story. It was like about sleeping. And then I'm sitting there, my husband's feeding him, and I'm reading the back of this story. And it's like in memory of these two babies who died of SIDS. And then I'm like, oh, and I had to go to the website and I had to read their stories. So I was in a state of anxiety. you know, I think we can all tell that from the dream. And what was the other question? What mood was I in the actual dream or when I woke up?
I think I can guess what it was during the dream, but then when you woke up yet.
Yeah, I think it was just that like sick to my stomach feeling of like panic or just like, I think sick to my stomach would be a good one.
Right. Yes. And I kind of call that the dream hangover, where you feel like that just happened. And part of the reason is because when we dream, our limbic system is completely active, but all these other parts of our brain are off. And so the part that controls our emotions is on, and we experience our emotions as if they're really happening. And so we perceive and we receive that information as a real thing. And all the neurochemical things that happen when we experience that anxiety and that panic are still happening. So when we wake up, it's still flowing in our blood. We can still feel that anxiety.
Makes sense.
And also emotions are energy in motion. So what we really try to do in dream work is to recognize what that energy is and to transform it through the integration of recognizing what's happening in the dream. So the next thing we're going to look at is the mirror. And that's really where, instead of me saying, well, you dreamt about this, and so it means this, I want to get the details from you and really have it be specific to you as the dreamer. So in this stage, I really look at the people that are in the dream, the places, the situations, and the actions. And it can also be colors or numbers or weather or anything, because sometimes you leave those things out. You might say, oh, well, I remember the sky was really blue, or I had on this pink dress, or little things you're not putting in the report. And so all of those things are really important. So when we start out, really what we have is you say, I remember is that you were jerked awake. So were you waking up in your dream?
Mm-hmm. Okay. Yeah. You know, and one thing about, I'll give it a little context. You know, when you're a new mom, you're so sleep deprived and there's so many things you need to remember or be aware of. And this has been kind of going on like since he was born, that I'll wake up in a panic thinking like, oh my God, I fell asleep with him next to me, or oh my God, I was supposed to be doing this thing. And I'm never actually he's never actually next to me. I'm never actually doing that thing. It's like, I've already put him back to bed. I've already done the thing, but it's like, I'm just so tired that I like forget. Or like the other night I woke up thinking, oh my God, I fell asleep with the baby in the bed. And it was like my dog against me. So it was that kind of feeling where I woke up in a panic, like, oh, I'm supposed to be doing something right now. So yeah, I woke up in my dream. And I can't remember if I woke up from a sleep or if I just like snapped to alertness and like realized I was in the middle of doing something.
Yeah, it's always interesting when you have that sort of dream within a dream. But in this case, your conscious awakeness was actually the dream state. So that's really interesting as where it begins. And so then you see that your son is upside down in the water. Now you say you believe he was in a container in the sink, but when you see him, he's upside down. Is that actually possible where you see him? Where is he at this point?
Yeah, no, it's like literally like, it's not like he's floating face down. It was like he was inverted. Like his head was down, his feet were up. And it was like he was in some sort of container that allowed him to be in that position.
Mm-hmm.
And I think he had clothes on. I'm pretty sure he had like a t-shirt and shorts on. But he was just like totally head down to maybe like his chest in water.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And so submerged to his chest, and you get the feeling that you must have been giving him a bath or something, and that perhaps you had fallen asleep or gotten distracted and left him there. So you panic and you pull him out and you scream and you get help. And when you're doing the CPR, what's happening in that moment?
Yeah, I mean, he was like dead in the dream. And I had recently taken a CPR course, so I know how to do it. And I gave it to him, and I don't remember the details. It's kind of fuzzy, but I remember giving the CPR, and then he like came back to life. I won't say my thoughts on it, but I was able to save him in the end. And the call for help was like, my husband, Shane, I was like, call 911. And he did. So, but yeah, I was the one that was able to save him.
So it's really good, obviously, that your efforts achieve what you're called to do, right? You know what you need to do and you do it, and he ends up being quote unquote fine. You end up resolving the situation. So there's a message there. But also when we look at the actions and the progression of the actions, just the verbs, we have jerked, submerged, fallen, distracted, panicked, screamed, revived. And so the progression of the actions really implies that there is something that is sudden that then you're feeling underwater with, that you're panicking about, and that you know intrinsically that you can revive this, that you can make it okay, that you're not distracted, you're not asleep at the wheel, in other words, because you feel like you think, maybe I did this, maybe I did that. But in the end, you know the solution, you know how to resuscitate and revive and make okay this situation. And you call for help, which is important because you intrinsically know that you need support in this. And it may or may not be this literal, the scenario. This is a literal scenario that's played out in your life that you're anxious about, but your subconscious takes these usual situations and makes them into stories to show you something else. Don't think that your dreams are always telling you what you already know, because they're actually presenting what you already know to tell you something else.
So it's like, it might not be about my son and my anxiety as a new mother at all.
Exactly. It's like, that's too obvious, right? Mm. And so, I mean, many times we look at the elements in dreams, and many times water can represent emotions. And to be submerged and to be upside down and to need revival and to not be able to breathe many times can mean that submersion into that emotion. It can be that feeling of the metaphor of being underwater, the metaphor of being submerged in something. And so I would look to other areas of your life, and this is where we get into the metaphor stage, where this scenario, water in a mother's panic, could be applied to something else in your life in addition to that. Because we know that that already should be true. But is there something else that you're feeling submerged in, that you're feeling that you need help with, that you, that your higher self is telling you, you know this, the way to revive this, to make it okay? And what is it that you're worried that you are asleep at the wheel at, that you're worried that you're distracted by?
That's really interesting. That's super fascinating. I mean, work stuff for sure. Yeah. Yes. Yeah, totally. Yeah. Wow. That's something I would have never put those two things together. I was just like, oh, I'm just panicked because I'm a new mother and my mind couldn't let him die. So it let me save him. And that was that. But that's super fascinating.
Yes. And many times that's what people think. They think, well, I had that, you know, recently somebody told me they work on radio and they have a panic dream about dead air, or other people, they're in school and they have a panic dream about tests. There's going to be a panic dream that's going to relate to a scenario in your life, but it's not necessarily a literal replay of that. Same if you watch a movie and then you have a dream and you can see that elements of the dream elements of the movie made it to the dream. Yeah. You're not just having that dream because you watched that movie. You consumed a lot of content that day and you thought about a lot of things. Think about how many thoughts we have per day. But what's coming out in that dream? It's taking those little pieces. It's taking those little puzzle parts of your life and putting them together into a story to tell you something else, to draw your attention to something else. And many times when we have recurring dreams, that's why they're recurring, because we're not paying attention and addressing what the dream's trying to show us. And it may or may not have anything to do with a real life scenario. But until we understand what it's trying to tell us and do something about it, that scenario is going to recur.
That makes sense. So in my case, I need to trust that I have the tools to resolve it and ask for help. Is that what we take away from it?
Yes. And I also think a lot of times when people appear in dreams, I like to first, instead of assuming it's that person, look at that person as a representative of something. Mm. And so I usually ask, and we can in this case of Shane and the child, if you were to describe this person with three adjectives, how would you describe them?
With Shane, I would say supportive and empathetic and caring. And also determined. I know that's four, but that's like coming in. And the child, I would say innocent and pure and loving.
Okay. So when we look at what's the interplay between those three elements, you, the other adult in the scenario, and then the child could very well represent that innocent, pure, loving part of yourself that has all these aspirations, but then you need that support and that empathy and that caring. And the determination element is really what comes into play to save the day. You spring into action. You don't sit there and say, well, we're just going to have to wait for 911 to come, or do something. You have to do something. You take the action. And so you're really embodying that determination aspect, and you're saving your innocence, your pureness, and realizing that you can save that aspect of yourself, that you don't need to be submerged and feeling like you're not with it is the best way I can say that you're overly distracted or you're asleep at the wheel. I like the metaphor of falling asleep, of course, because and the fact that you're waking up inside the dream. I mean, the metaphors of sleeping and waking are really at play here also in this just this short scenario. So that's quite interesting since it's inside the dream.
I love this. I feel like I'm never going to look at a dream the same again, because that's just, it's like when you walk me through it like that, it's so obvious, but it's nothing I would have ever thought.
Right.
But it's really fascinating. So I guess like the people who come to see you, is it just like they have this dream that's maybe recurring, or like does someone ever come to see you just because like one dream like really bothered them so much and they need to like figure out their plan? Or is it like people you happen to work with and then whenever they have a dream we'd like dive into that?
Yeah, it's a combination of things, because when the student is ready, the teacher appears. So it can be either, well, I've had this recurring dream for a long time and I want to know what it means and I'm ready to get over it, or I am spiritually seeking and maybe you're consuming other content, you're reading books, you're going to webinars, you're working with other coaches, maybe you're doing some inner healing, you recognize that the synchronicities that are happening around you, you're starting to feel like you're going through some sort of awakening, but you don't know what it is or how you can get assistance with that. That's where dream work can really help with that. It's a great complement to any of these other modalities that lots of people in the spiritual space are doing, because it's yet another way to access your intuition, to really tap into that higher mind. So it's a combination of people that are already curious about dreams and want to start on that interpretation path, to people that are just really seeking that mystical guidance on their spiritual journey. And they want the tools to help them raise their spiritual intelligence and to be able to tap into their own wisdom. Because really, the meanings of our dreams are so personal to us that, you know, I want to empower people to be able to do this themselves. And that's why I have dream empowerment programs that really just are meant to teach you the tools and show you the path so that you can learn to decode your own dream language and take that forward.
That totally makes sense. And, you know, most people are on a path of self-knowledge, right? They want to learn more about themselves. And it's like you said, you're literally like tapping into source and back home when you're asleep. So it's divine downloads. So when we talked before this, you mentioned lucid dream techniques and dream manifestation techniques. So I would love to just hear a couple. Well, let's start with dream manifestation techniques. Tell me what that is. And then, if you want to just give a couple of techniques for listeners.
Yeah. So dream manifestation is really where you purposefully use your intention to manifest a solution in your dreams. So whether that's a creative inspiration that you're looking for, or maybe you're trying to solve a project and a problem in a relationship or a project at work, something that you're looking for guidance from your higher self with. So when you go, before you go to sleep, write down in your journal thoughts and questions about this specific thing that you want to manifest an answer to. And your subconscious is going to work on that, and it's going to allow you to propose the question and wait for the answer. And especially if you're looking for something creative, in case you're maybe have writer's block, for example, if you immerse yourself in that topic area, so reading or listening to or whatever it is that you're trying to solve, really doing that right before you go to sleep, then asking the question. Then in the morning, as soon as you wake up, try to remember your dream and then do the process of decoding it to see where in that story the answer lies to your question.
I love that. Because when you're asleep, you're literally in your subconscious mind for 7-8 hours, right? And I actually teach clients something similar when I'm trying to help them manifest their dream life, is to I do all this journaling with them. And it's like, read it right before bed, because then your subconscious literally works on it. But I love the idea of asking your subconscious this question and to help you. So that's a really cool technique. I'm gonna try using that. And then lucid dreaming. I'm such a fan of the film Waking Life. Have you seen that?
I have not.
Oh my gosh. Okay. As a dream worker, you need to go see Waking Life. It's amazing. Okay. It's I guess it's animated, but it's like really interesting animations of different kinds. But the whole thing is about lucid dreaming. And it's really philosophical, but it's also like, it goes deep into philosophy, but it's also very much about lucid dreaming. And they say, like, they give little tips, like try and turn the light switch on or something like that, right? Or like look at numbers. So yeah, you'll love it. Go check it out. But anyway, I'd love for you to give us a few lucid dreaming techniques.
Yeah. So my favorite one is looking at your hands. And I actually have this in my books because I'm so fascinated by this technique. It was one of the first books that I read on lucid dreaming, was Lucid Dreaming by Stephen LaBerge. And he was one of the first people to really study it in the laboratory in the 70s. And one of his techniques, and I was determined to get it to work, was during the day, look at your hands and make a habit of looking at your hands throughout the day, so that when you are dreaming, at some point you're going to do that as well, because it's part of your daily routine. And that's when you'll notice that you're dreaming, lucid dreaming. And that actually worked for me after practicing it for some time, because I was looking at my hands. And then I looked at my hands and I didn't have any rings on. And I was like, yes, because I knew I'd made it. Of course, then I woke up. Which gets to the, you know, later techniques of not getting so excited when you attain lucidity, because it can wake you right out of the dream. But that is one of the really good techniques. And really, reality checks are quite an interesting practice, because it starts to destabilize the concept of reality, which is really what's the basis of metaphysical thought. So the more that you say, am I dreaming? Am I awake? All of a sudden you start to realize that the dream world and the awake world, they start to become less defined, right?
That's really cool. I've only actually lucid dreamed once. And I remember being like, well, I might as well try flying because I'm here. And then I woke up.
Oh, yes. Yes. It's fascinating when you're... Yeah, when you're in that situation, I've had many lucid dreams where I was like, okay, I'm here. All right, where am I? I need to get like a newspaper or a clock, or I know I'm trying to figure out where I am, what time I'm in, all of the detail. And it's exciting. And when that happens, it can be distracting too.
That's cool. It's like you're a little sleuth detective in your own dream world. And were you able to do it? Were you able to find the pieces you needed to put the puzzle together?
I was able to find a newspaper, but I couldn't read the date. So
that brings me to another question. Why don't we ever have cell phones in our dreams?
Oh, I do.
Oh, you do?
Oh, yes. All the time. But they don't work.
So that's interesting, because there's this kind of universal thought, like one of the arguments for simulation theory is that we don't dream about technology. Like, I've never dreamt about technology before, and I don't. Oh. You're the first person that I've ever heard actually dream about technology.
Oh, just countless. I mean, you could almost call it a recurring, where I have my phone, but there's something wrong with the screen and I can't get it to work and I can't find the numbers. And then I try to dial and it doesn't work. And all those, it doesn't work dreams. But with the phone, yes.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Well, Is there anything else about dream work or dreaming, dream interpretation that we didn't touch on today that you really want people to take away?
I think the most important thing is really to just start having dream appreciation. Mm. So I'm a member of the International Association for the Study of Dreams, and one of their founders, Montague Ullman, calls it dream appreciation because he realizes that from a cultural perspective, we don't appreciate them. We don't talk about them. We're not taught how to understand them. And we're, on the contrary, taught to be a little bit embarrassed or ashamed of them. And so just getting into the practice of appreciating the fact that this is a large part of our existence and that they do have value is the first step. And then starting to cultivate a practice around paying attention. Because whenever you pay attention to something, that's where your energy goes and that's where your focus will be. And just like yoga or meditation or any other spiritual practice, the more you do it, the better you get at it. So don't feel discouraged in the beginning if you feel like, well, I don't remember my dreams or I'm not going to be able to do that. Like with anything, it just takes dedication and practice. But the more that you pay attention, the more information you're going to receive. And it really can be a doorway and a portal for spiritual guidance. So it's an amazing experience if you open that door.
Yeah, I like that. And then, you know, it was making me think though, like any advice for someone who never remembers their dreams, like my husband never remembers his dreams.
Yes. And I was really surprised in the beginning to find that a lot of people have that problem because I'm a very high dream recaller and I'll remember 3 to 5 per night. So the first step is really that intention because you can unknowingly, subconsciously turn off your dream recall. Mm-hmm. So you had a dream that you didn't want to receive that information. You said, no, I'm not listening to that. And your subconscious said, okay, we'll stay quiet then. And went away. So you have to be willing to tap into that. The other thing is really practicing a moment when you wake up where you don't immediately get out of bed. You don't immediately start thinking about your day. You allow that transition of your brainwave states to linger. And in that space, you can access both backwards and forwards. So instead of going forwards and thinking, what time is it? What do I have to do today? Think backwards to where you just were, who you were just talking to, what you were just looking at, what you were just doing. It's right there behind the veil. And if you can focus on it and access even one little hit about what that dream was about, it's going to start to unravel more and more and reveal itself. And you're going to start to remember, oh yeah, that's right. I was running down a hill. And then, oh yeah, that's right. And before that, and you're going to start, it's going to start coming back the more you focus on it and hang out in that space. I call it the middle world, that space between sleeping and dreaming. I mean,
that's great advice.
Waking and dreaming. Yes.
Yeah. I love it. That's great advice. I will pass that on. It has been such a pleasure to talk to you today. Thank you so much for sharing all this. Thank you for interpreting my dream. I'm sure that was just as fascinating for listeners. And I'm sure listeners want to know how they can connect with you, where they can find you, and what your offers are. So please feel free to share.
Yes. So you can visit me at meganmary.com. That's M-E-G-A-N-M-A-R-Y. And there you will find my dream sessions, my online courses, my podcast, Women's Dream Enlightenment, and my book that's coming out in October, The Dream Haunters, A Metaphysical Mystery of Magic. And in that story, it really tells the spiritual awakening, metaphysical story of a young woman finding herself and her powers. And it's set all at Halloween. So it's a perfect fall story to really inspire and entertain you.
Amazing. Well, thank you again so much. If you are listening, please like, comment, share, subscribe, send this to someone you think could use it. And I will see you all next time. Have a beautiful rest of your day.